My Govan, and welcome to the Tolkien Lore Channel. I'm the Tolkien Geek, and in this video I am going to talk about a theme that is pretty explicitly stated in Tolkien's Legendarium, but not always easy to spot. And one of these, the one that I'm thinking of in particular, comes at, you might say, the beginning of Tolkien's Legendarium. It's, in fact, in the very beginning of the Silmarillion. Because when Ilúvatar has all of the Ainur make the great music, and Melkor creates his discord, and all of this stuff goes on, eventually Ilúvatar will tell everybody, you know, Melkor thinks he's something, but, you know, if he thinks he can alter the music in my despite, he's wrong. And he basically says that whatever Melkor does, I will just end up turning it into something more beautiful and something that actually ends up in my service, or to glorify me, rather than just something bad that he came up with. In the moment, he actually gives examples of this. He tells Ulmo of the fact that, you know, Melkor has created excessive heat and excessive cold, and what this has done to water is it's turned water into clouds, and it's turned water into ice, which has its own beauty, and all this other stuff. So there's this theme right from the outset. And, of course, this draws from Tolkien's own Christian, you know, worldview, which also, has this idea. That's a very long-standing idea in Christian thought, that God can turn evil things in the world to good through his providence, which is not to say that he creates the bad things that good things may come. It's to say that evil things happen because of what other people do. But God can use that evil thing and make it turn to something good so that, you know, nothing is entirely wasted, you might say. Where do we see examples of this? It's not always easy to find them. Ilúvatar gives us those really early examples right there in the first chapter of the Silmarillion. But throughout the rest of the story, and even in the Lord of the Rings and such, it's not always easy to spot where something bad happens and it gets turned to something good. But it occurred to me the other day that Boromir is actually a really good example of this. I have talked before on this channel about the fact that Boromir seems not to have been the person who was supposed to end up in the Fellowship. It seems like Faramir was the one who really was supposed to be in Rivendell, because he's the one who had the dream that he and Boromir shared first, and he had it many times, and Boromir only seemingly had it once. This would seem to imply that Faramir, who, let's admit, you know, had certainly the greater wisdom and probably was much more naturally inclined to go along with Gandalf's advice, whatever that might be, and also much more likely to go along with the plan that the Council of Elrond came up with than Boromir. Boromir was always kind of reluctant and not too happy with the idea, whereas when Faramir finally meets Frodo and Sam in the Woods of Ithilien, and he finds out, kind of by accident because of Sam's slip-up, that Frodo is carrying the One Ring, he acts like he's going to be, you know, he kind of jokes, sort of, and, you know, acts like he's going to be something like a Boromir and try to take the ring, but in fact he ends up telling them, no, I have no interest in taking this thing. In fact, he had already said that. If and if I found this thing by the wayside, I would not take it. And then he confirms that again. He said, what I said before was true, and we men of Minas Tirith are at least men of our word. Sam will later congratulate him on passing the test, and Faramir will say, you know, the praise of the praiseworthy is above all rewards, but no, I had no... You know, there's no real praise in this because I had no desire to do anything other than what I have done. So Faramir would have been by far the better candidate, seemingly, than Boromir, because Faramir would not have ended up trying to take the ring from Frodo by force. So Boromir going is a bad thing, seemingly. Now, what good thing came out of Boromir going? Well, there's at least one major thing, and that is itself Boromir's own death and redemption, which seems kind of backward. Boromir gets killed. How is that a great thing? Well, you have to remember, Tolkien comes from a religion which really likes its martyrs. Martyrdom is kind of one of the highest praiseworthy things you can do in Christianity, and Catholicism especially places a huge emphasis on martyrs. It has a huge long list of saints who were martyred or in other ways persecuted, and they're a big deal. Now, obviously, everything in The Lord of the Rings takes place, in a prehistoric period, theoretically, and so it's well before Christianity or even Judaism comes on the scene, and therefore, we're not looking at this through the lens of Boromir is martyred for the faith or something like that. But we do get hints, of course, again, partially through Faramir, that the men of Minas Tirith at least still maintain something like the old religion of Numenor, which worships Eru Iluvatar, the one god. So Boromir is at least presumably acquainted with this, and however devout he is, we never really find out because we never see him in that setting, whereas we see Faramir have his moment of silence before eating where his men stand and look to the west. So we don't know if Boromir is really that devout in terms of the religious aspect of it, but certainly he would have probably at least had a fundamental belief that there is a, the one god, Eru Iluvatar, and, the Valar under him who are in the west that can no longer be reached by mortals. So there is a certain sense in which there is a religious aspect of this, but it's also kind of a redemption of a semi-pagan type of person in the sense that there is no Judaism, there is no Christianity, it's not exactly a developed theology here. And his martyrdom not only fits the idea of the northern courage that Tolkien was so fond of, but there's even hints within the text itself that it matters for his own personal soul. I mean, we never hear the word soul used, but the idea that it was good for him in some sense is kind of stated in the text. And I'll give you the example that I'm thinking of right here, because Gandalf, when he meets the three hunters in Fangorn Forest, will end up talking to them about a lot of things, and one of them, of course, is Boromir. And when he finds out from Aragorn how exactly Boromir died and all this stuff, he will say, "Poor Boromir, I could not see what happened to him. It was a sore trial for such a man, a warrior and a lord of men. Galadriel told me that he was in peril, but he escaped in the end. I am glad. It was not in vain that the young hobbits came with us, if only for Boromir's sake." If only for Boromir's sake. Like, it seems like, again, the only thing that happened to Boromir because of Merry and Pippin was that he got killed trying to save them, which he didn't even manage to do. They still got captured. Gandalf here clearly has to be talking about something about his own personal piety, not something about his own, future or, his physical well-being. I mean, that's clearly not what he's talking about. When he says he escaped in the end, he's talking about escaped from the temptation of the ring. He escaped because Frodo escaped, and then he was forced to think about other things and eventually defend Merry and Pippin and gave his life doing so. And so you can write that off as just merely, oh, well, he managed to not actually take the ring. That's cool. But then to turn around and say it was good that Merry and Pippin came for Boromir's sake, clearly Gandalf is talking about something like a redemption of his own conscience or his soul or whatever you want to say. He has to be thinking in that direction because otherwise it makes no sense. Him dying doesn't benefit him in any way per se, but if he's dying in defense of Merry and Pippin after having kind of repented and realized his mistake and turned back from the idea of taking the ring and doing something with it, and now he's turning that around, and even though it's not Frodo he's defending, it's still one of the hobbits who he had just cursed. "Curse you all, you to death and darkness, you and all halflings," is what he had said after Frodo disappeared. Well, those hobbits that he had just cursed in his anger and thoughtlessness, he is now defending with his own life. And that, you know, whether you take a Christian view of the soul or anything else, clearly shows at least a redemption of his moral character, because now he is turning around and doing something with his life that redeems that aspect of him that was so, you know, at the very beginning, like I said, it was really mainly a reluctance to go along with the plan of destroying the ring. He wanted to use it. And he never really left that idea, I don't think. It's not exactly clear, but certainly by the time he talks to Frodo again, the idea has crept back up in his mind to the point where he's really not willing to, you know, just spoil the opportunity. And he knows at this point that it's probably his last shot, because here they are. They have to make a decision which direction they're going to go. He knows which direction Frodo thinks he has to go. He's got to make his move now. At this point, it's kind of the crisis where he has to either intervene and get that ring, or get Frodo to go along with him, or it's gone, and he has no more opportunity. This lust for the ring, which, you know, is in some ways kind of symbolic of just the way evil works, right? You sit around temptation long enough, it's going to be a problem. This temptation that's been building in him for such a long time finally overtakes him, and he, you know, he acts evilly as a result of it. He escapes because of how things go down, but curses hobbits, you know, to death and darkness in the process. And then he goes and he defends Merry and Pippin and sacrifices his life doing so. Even though he doesn't succeed, Gandalf is telling us here, he reformed himself in that moment. And from a Catholic perspective in particular, this looks an awful lot like last rites, if you think about it. The office of last rites in Catholicism is the idea that you go through the, you know, the penance part of, you know, the confession, that all that stuff. You confess your sins, the priest gives you some kind of absolution, all that stuff. And the last rites, it's done just before your death so as to cleanse your soul of any remaining sins so that hopefully you don't spend any time in purgatory, you just go straight to heaven. That's the Catholic idea of how this works. Well, look at the scene. When Aragorn finds Boromir, he's on death's door. Boromir gets a little bit of information out of him. Boromir freely admits, without Aragorn really prodding about it, Aragorn had asked him earlier, like, what did you do? Where's Frodo? What's going on? And Boromir was like, I got angry with him. He put on the ring. He had disappeared. I've never seen anything like that before. I don't want to say anything else right now. He was not in a confessional mood at that point. Now that he's on death's door, he's confessing. He tells Aragorn everything. He says, I tried to take the ring from Frodo. I have failed. You know, you need to go and save Minas Tirith. You need to go and do what I, you know. He freely admits his fault, though, is the key point. Aragorn, kind of in the role of the priest here, says, no, you haven't failed. Few have achieved such a victory. And this echoes what Gandalf will later tell him about, you know, it was good for Merry and Pippin to be there. Few have achieved such a victory. And he kisses his brow, which is kind of reminiscent of another aspect of the Last Rites, because if I'm not mistaken, in Last Rites, they also, at least traditionally in old times, maybe not as much now, anoint the dying person with oil, basically. You know, Aragorn isn't carrying around a flask of oil or anything to anoint people with, but he kisses his brow as kind of like a combination of the absolution and the anointing. It looks an awful lot like a parallel to Last Rites here. Boromir then dies, and of course Aragorn, Legolas, and Gimli send him off in a funeral ceremony with the weapons of his enemies, kind of showing like this is how he paid. Now, that's not why they're doing that, but they're doing it more to honor him than anything else. But you can see the parallels here. It looks a lot like a Catholic last rites thing in a non-Christian setting. The dying man confesses. He receives something like absolution, not exactly absolution, because Aragorn is not in the role of forgiving him, but he is in the role of saying, you're actually fine. And so he's not absolving him of the sin, but he's kind of saying, you've already done that by doing what you did, by, fighting to the death and kind of accepting your martyrdom willingly. You've already done, everything you need to do, and so now you're fine and you can die in peace. And then Boromir dies almost immediately after all that happens, because Aragorn then is like, but where's Frodo? And Boromir doesn't answer, because at that point he's dead. And I'm not trying to say here that Tolkien was deliberately trying to write an allegory of the Catholic last rites ritual here, but it's hard to escape the idea that he is at least conveying this sense of Boromir's redemption through some subtle cues. What goes on at his death scene, what Gandalf later tells Aragorn, all this stuff. If Boromir had not come on this trip and had not died in the defense of Merry and Pippin, who would have been meeting Frodo and Ithilien, if anybody? Boromir. What might have happened in that scenario? Something a lot worse than what we got. Now, it's possible, of course, that Frodo and Sam and Gollum would have evaded, the men of Ithilien altogether if Faramir had been the one to go, because Boromir, being the much more warlike party of, between him and his brother, a lot of things could have gone differently in Ithilien in the time between when Boromir left for Rivendell and when he came back, and when Frodo and Sam, rather, came back through there and on their quest to Mount Doom. So it's possible they would have not been caught at all, but certainly Boromir would never have had this opportunity to basically learn his lesson and die a martyr's death and get sort of like a last rites absolution of what he had done wrong. So Boromir might not have died, but his moral character perhaps would not have been as reformed either by the end of it, and he might have been, if he survived the War of the Ring, a not entirely willing participant in Aragorn taking the throne of Gondor. It's not 100% clear how that would have gone down. So if Faramir had gone, it would have been, at least on the surface, better overall. But for Boromir personally, it seems like Ilúvatar took the mistake that was made in that regard and basically used that to turn Boromir into one of the greatest heroes of the end of the Third Age. And you can just kind of see him, if you analogize Ilúvatar and Melkor as if they're constantly playing this game of chess with the world, which is how some people have kind of thought about God and the devil. This idea that they're constantly waging some kind of a war, and it's, who wins what victories. You could just kind of see in your mind, if you think about it, like Ilúvatar, sacrifices one of his pieces, say a bishop or something like that, and that could represent Boromir, and Melkor thinks, haha, I've got you now. And then it turns out the sacrifice was a means of checkmating Melkor on this one particular element of, and you could just kind of see Ilúvatar saying, see, I told you, I will turn everything that you mess up into something good. So even though Boromir dies, Ilúvatar, and even though Boromir, goes when it really should have been Faramir, Ilúvatar uses that whole situation to get Boromir to where Boromir needs to be kind of right with God, as it were. He turns himself around, he reforms his character, and perhaps at the end he actually, to the extent that we don't know anything about his, devoutness in terms of Gondorian religion, whatever that might be, perhaps at the end he actually does take it more seriously as well and realizes, maybe I should have thought more about that when I was growing up, and a little less about fighting battles and all the other. So I just thought this was a really beautiful way of looking at Boromir's death as a really concrete example of that theme that is set up so early in the Silmarillion and yet is not obviously ever played out in too many instances. So tell me what you think about this idea. See if, you know, maybe you could think of other examples of this. Do you think I'm off base with this one? You know, just let me know in the comments what your thoughts are, whatever they are. Like and share the video, of course, if you enjoyed it. Make sure you subscribe if you want to catch more of my content. Click the bell icon on YouTube. Make sure you don't miss any notifications. Follow me on the platform formerly known as Twitter for Tolkien-related trivia questions throughout the week. Find other support and social links in the description below. And until the next time, I'm the Tolkien Geek, signing out for the Tolkien Lore Channel. Namarie.
Thanks to all my channel supporters, especially Paul Leone, Nathan Dufour, and Robert Kindling.